everyone, and welcome to Hollywood Soup. This is Dizzy D, and thank you for tuning in to Penguin Radio to hear about entertainment news, celebrity gossip, new movie releases, and popular music. I have a lot of things in store for you today, including my segments called Movie Monday, True or False, Toon Talk, and The Dirty D. So throughout the show, I will be covering what celebrity is afraid of dolphins, what three music artists are banging the music charts, and what actor is getting sued by their dentist. So I hope that you're ready, because this is the start of an exciting show, and I will now jump into my first segment, Movie Monday. So on Saturday, I saw the movie Gone Girl, which is based on a novel written by Gillian Flynn, who also wrote the screenplay. And this film was directed by David Fincher, who has been nominated for Academy Awards for Best Director for his movies The Social Network and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And The Social Network actually won the Golden Globe Award for Best Director. And also in Gone Girl, Reese Witherspoon happens to be one of the producers, which I thought was really cool. And Gone Girl is a mystery thriller film, and the world premiere was on September 26, 2014, during the opening night of the 52nd New York Film Festival. And the movie was released in theaters on October 3rd, 2014. And the starring actors included Ben Affleck, Neil Patrick Harris, and Tyler Perry. So I wanted to go see this movie because there was so much press, so much talk about it, and it was a highly, highly anticipated film, so I had to go see it, obviously. I have not read the book, but there are so many millions of people who have, so I now am curious to see how the book compares to the movie. But the synopsis of the movie is basically about Ben Affleck's character, Nick Dunn, and we first see him at a bar talking to this woman bartender. I didn't know who she was at the time, but later we find out who she is later. But he goes into the bar to get a drink and talks to this woman, and then he goes home and finds that his wife, named Amy, who is played by Rosamund Pike, has gone missing. So right when he finds out that his wife went missing, Nick contacts the police. They search their home, and then we learn that it was the couple's anniversary. And every year, Amy does this sort of scavenger hunt and leaves clues around the house and different places that they share with each other to lead towards her present that she gives Nick for their anniversary. But throughout the movie, the media is heavily involved in this whole search to find Amy, which leads to Nick being the prime suspect of her disappearance and what they think is that he murdered his wife. So I don't really want to give the whole movie away, but because I'm sure there's some of you who have not seen the movie or read the book, but there are so many twists and turns and unexpected events that happen that really make you think. And because this movie at parts is narrated by Amy, and you see her writing in her diary throughout the entire film, there's parts of the movie where you don't doubt for a second that Nick has anything to do with her disappearance, but then there are parts where you really sympathize with Amy and you kind of see her side and then you see Nick's side, and it just goes back and forth. So there's different perspectives perceived that kind of make you go back and forth. And I'm just going to leave you with this, because obviously I don't want to give the whole thing away, but I walked out of the movie theater saying to myself, what the hell just happened? I loved it. It was weird. How did that part happen? That character was so smart. I felt so uncomfortable when that character came in. There was just so much going on in the movie. I thought it was incredible. Now I just want to read the book, because the movie, it just really makes you think, especially about the relationships you have with other people, especially romantic, intimate relationships, and how when you meet someone, everything is great. You get along so well. And then once you've been together for a while, you truly, truly get to know that person and you get to know one another. So it was predicted by ComingSoon.net that Gone Girl would have had an opening weekend earning $30 to $35 million in the box office. Now, in North America, this film earned $38 million, totaling to an overall earning of $62 million worldwide. That is crazy. It was insane. Such a good movie. But Rotten Tomatoes gave Gone Girl a 87% with an average rating of 8 out of 10. And so I went to go see this movie with my parents. And by the way, BTW, this probably was the best movie to go see with your parents just because there were a couple of sex scenes during the movie and I was just sitting there kind of uncomfortable because my parents were sitting right next to me. But if you are planning to go see this movie, maybe not see it with your parents. I took that one for the team. So now you know, maybe not to go see that with your parents. But right when the movie ended, I asked my dad what he thought of it. And I didn't even really have to ask him. He pretty much said, it sucked. And then I asked my mom if she liked the movie. And she kind of thought it was confusing at some parts, but she overall liked it. So I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. I definitely will see it again in my future. The outstanding performances for me were obviously Ben Affleck. I thought he did a great job, but he always does a great job in every single movie that I've seen of his. He is just an outstanding actor and director. He's starring as Batman soon, so that will be interesting to see as well. And then I thought Rosamund Pike was outstanding, and I thought she did a phenomenal job. I've actually never seen a movie with her in it, so it was interesting to see her for the first time perform, but I thought she did great. And lastly, I thought Neil Patrick Harris did outstanding as well. We were introduced to his character early on, but we really find out more about him towards the end of the movie. And obviously, like I said before, I don't want to spoil it for you because it's just insane. I was at a loss for words when I came out of the movie theater. I was like, what just happened? I couldn't believe it. But anyways, I really love How I Met Your Mother. I'm a huge fan of that show. And I really loved him as Barney in that TV show. But in Gone Girl, he plays a character who's completely different. But I really loved how he played the part because, okay, so you know how when he plays Barney, he's just kind of that, not macho, he's not macho at all, but he just kind of doesn't really care how he acts towards women, and he thinks he's like hot stuff. But in Gone Girl, he was kind of more creepy, and he was just infatuated by a certain someone, and it was creepy. That's all I can say. But basically, I really enjoyed those three actors' performances, and I really enjoyed the movie, period. I loved Gone Girl, and I think you should all go see it. It's a great film, but just don't see it with your parents. So that was Movie Monday, and I hope you enjoyed it. Tune in next week on Penguin Radio to hear what movie I decide to go see, synopsize, and review. So when we come back, I will start my true or false segment, but we will be back after this short break.
Welcome to another Bosco Break. Today I've got a few stories for you, starting with the man on the moon, but what scientists call Oceanus Procellarum, the huge dark splotch on the moon visible from Earth. Either way, how did it get there? One commonly held view is that a massive asteroid slammed into the young moon and left its mark, but researchers at MIT say they've got new evidence showing that the 1,800-mile-wide region came not from beyond, but from within. Specifically from a volcanic eruption that unleashed a large plume of magma deep within the moon's interior. As the lava made its way to the surface and cooled, it created the dark spots we see today. In their study, researchers say one of the giveaways is that the new data from NASA shows that the region's border is not actually round, but is instead rimmed by structures that run in straight lines and intersect at angles, similarly to a rectangle. Such a shape is hard to attribute to a collision, which would be expected to produce a more circular rim. Definitive proof might not come unless astronauts return to the moon, but in the meantime, astronomy writer Phil Plait at Slate thinks the theory makes sense. I've always had a problem with the impact idea, he writes, adding that the secondary effects that would have accompanied such a huge meteor strike don't appear to be evident. In other news, if you happen to find some remnants of woven wool in your attic, in red, white, or blue, and marked Fort McHenry, the Smithsonian Institution would like to know. 200 years after a massive flag was hoisted over the fort in Baltimore that withstood a British attack, Americans from Maine to California may still have fragments from the original Star-Spangled Banner. Not long after the huge 30-foot by 42-foot flag, inspired an 1814 poem by Francis Scott Key that would become the national anthem, its caretakers began snipping off pieces. By the 1880s, about 20% had been lost. Cutting up a flag today could be considered desecration, but back then, the clippings were given away as keepsakes. It was such a monumental moment in time that people felt they wanted to hold a piece of that history, said Jennifer Jones, a curator who oversees the flag at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. Some are more valuable than others. The 15th Cotton Star was cut away sometime before 1873 and remains missing. That's all for your Bosco Break. Back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Hollywood Soup. You are listening to radio.dominican.edu. You are still listening to Hollywood Soup with Dizzy D, and now I'm going to move on to my next segment, True or False. I'm going to be sharing some facts. Some are true and some are false. So here is my first one. Does John Mayer grow avocados and sell them to Chipotle? This is false. But Jason Mraz actually moved to a property with hundreds of avocado trees. Since he wanted to live somewhere out in nature, the singer, vegan, and environmentalist thought it would be a great idea to keep these trees growing. Jason Mraz eats about 2 to 4 avocados a day, but the rest of his supplies goes to the food chain Chipotle. And I actually heard this from Tyler Oakley. And if you have not heard of Tyler Oakley and don't know who he is a YouTube personality. And I watch his videos all the time. He's just super funny. He talks pretty much what I talk about, just celebrities, gossip, entertainment, all of that jazz. And he actually recently, about a month ago, I want to say, came out with a podcast on iTunes. And him and his co-star, Corey Cool, were talking about this little fun fact, and I thought it would be interesting to share with all of you. So if you've not seen, or not seen, if you've never heard of Tyler Oakley and Corey Cool's podcast, you should check it out. It's called Psychobabble, and you can find that on iTunes. So since this, I'm moving on now, but since it is the first episode of October, my episode of October, let's move on to my next question, which involves the Disney Halloween movie, Hocus Pocus. So, did Leonardo DiCaprio turn down the role of Max in the movie Hocus Pocus? This is true. Leo DiCaprio revealed that he turned down the part of Max when he was 18 years old so he could audition for the movie What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Leonardo stated, "I don't know where the hell I got the nerve. You live in an environment where you're influenced by people telling you to make a lot of money and strike while the iron's hot. But if there's one thing I am proud of, it's being a young man who was sticking to my guns." So I thought that was interesting. I always thought that he could definitely, I could see him playing this role in Hocus Pocus. It's one of my all-time favorite Halloween movies, and I can't wait to see it. I was actually trying to look for it before I came here to see when it was on next, because okay, Hocus Pocus and Halloween Town are my two favorite Halloween movies, and I cannot wait to see them because we're in October, we are in the month, we have to watch these Halloween movies. You know, scary movies, but Halloween Town and Hocus Pocus are my absolute favorites. So moving on, was Christopher Walken a lion tamer? This is so true. Christopher Walken worked in a traveling circus as a lion tamer as a teenager. Beginning or not beginning, being more of an assistant to the owner of the circus, who was also a lion tamer, Christopher Walken dressed up in an identical outfit playing his son. He would do tricks with the lions and even compared them to dogs, because one lion in particular named Sheba was very sweet and would do things such as rolling over, sitting up, and running. So Christopher Walken knew he was the jack of all trades in the show business industry, because he could sing, he could dance, and then he got his first job acting. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I never knew that celebrities were lion tamers. So that was pretty cool. So moving on to my next question. Was Tim Allen arrested for possessing 2 pounds of cocaine? This is false. Tim Allen was actually arrested in 1978 at the Kalamazoo Battle Creek International Airport for possessing 1.4 pounds of cocaine. So not as much as 2 pounds, but 1.4. He pleaded guilty while providing names of dealers, and he had a sentence of 3 to 7 years in prison rather than a life sentence. He was then paroled 2 years later in 1981, and then in 1994, speaking of movies that I love, he starred in one of my all-time favorite Christmas movies, The Santa Claus, and then he starred in the sequel, 2 and 3. So Christmas is coming. I have to see those movies because they're my all-time favorites. But anyways, moving on to a author. Was J.K. Rowling fired from her job as a secretary for daydreaming too much? This is very true. Before J.K. Rowling wrote the Harry Potter series, she worked at Amnesty International in London as a secretary, but always dreamed of being a writer. She would secretly write stories on her computer, and then she would daydream about the character who actually was the teenager named Harry Potter, who was also a wizard. Her boss then fired her and was fed up of J.K. Rowling's brainstorming, and then over the following few years, she solely focused on writing. So, I mean, if she never got fired, maybe she would never have written the series. We never know. So that's probably a good thing. But anyways, moving on to my next question. Is Tyra Banks terrified of whales? This is false, but Tyra Banks is actually terrified of dolphins. Since she was 8 years old, Tyra Banks would suffer from nightmares about dolphins, but she faced her fear at the San Diego, California SeaWorld being filmed for the Tyra Banks show. She found a way to control her fear, but she admitted that this fear was not over. Tyra Banks stated, "The fear is not over. I've gotten a little past it, but there is something that still lives inside me." So I thought that was interesting. I've never been encountered by dolphins. That sounds weird, like I swim in the ocean on a daily basis. I've never touched or played or swam with a dolphin before. I've always wanted to do that, but maybe I would become terrified of them. I don't know. But I thought that was an interesting fear to have, an interesting phobia that I would like to share with you. But moving on to my next question. Did Cameron Diaz get the role of Tina in the film The Mask after several years of acting experience? This is false. Starting modeling at the age of 16, Cameron Diaz worked for companies such as Calvin Klein and Levi's. When she was 21 years old, her modeling agency set her up with an audition for the film The Mask in 1994, having no prior acting experience. Cameron Diaz then landed the role for Tina after 12 callbacks. Then she started her acting career, and for the past 20 years, she hasn't looked back. So that is her first acting debut, was for the film The Mask, and it's a very good movie. I really like that one. So moving on to another actress, She was had a minor role in another movie. Did Gwyneth Paltrow have a minor role in the film Hook? This is true. Gwyneth Paltrow played the role of Wendy Darling at the age of 18 years old in flashback scenes in the movie Hook. Being her second movie role ever, she was next to stars of the film, including Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman, and Julia Roberts, and directed by Steven Spielberg. So since Steven Spielberg is Gwyneth Paltrow's grandfather, she had an advantage of getting the role compared to other girls auditioning. So I thought that was interesting. It's all about who you know, right? But anyways, moving on. Did Brad Pitt attend Beverly Hills High School? This is false, but his wife, Angelina Jolie, did. Graduating at the age of 16, Angelina Jolie attended the school where the movie's Clueless was filmed, and also where the hit television series Beverly Hills 90210 was created from Beverly Hills High School. In the series Beverly Hills 90210, they approached the school board asking if they could film this series, but the school board denied requests for the series being filmed there, and so the producers generated West Beverly Hills High School. So, moving on to my last question. Was Pretty Little Liars star Lucy Hale in the ICU right after she was born? This is false, but her co-star from Pretty Little Liars, Ashley Benson, was born 2 months early, only weighing 2 pounds and 8 ounces, and she was in the intensive care unit for 2 months, and her parents were told that she was going to need heart surgery on Christmas Day. But then their miracles were answered and their prayers were heard. Their parents were told that she didn't need heart surgery anymore because Ashley Benson's heart closed up. So she never needed surgery, and Ashley Benson went home as a 4.5-pound baby girl, and now she lives a completely healthy life. So those are all of my true or false stories I have for the week. After this short break, I will be moving on to my third segment, Tunes Talk, and now I'm going to leave you with the song Bang Bang by Jesse James, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj. Stay tuned here on Penguin Radio.
Queen Nicki dominant, prominent. It's me, Jesse, and Ari. If they test me, they sorry. Riders up like a Harley, then pull off in this Ferrari. If he hanging, we banging. Phone ringing, he slanging. It ain't karaoke night, but get the mic, cause I'm singing. B to the A, to the N, to the G, to the B. to the N to the G. Hey.
All right, welcome back to Hollywood Soup on radio.dominican.edu. This is Dizzy D, and now I'm going to jump into my third segment, Toonstalk. You just heard the song Bang Bang by Jessie J, Ariana Grande, and Nicki Minaj, so I'm pretty sure you've already heard the song because it's been out for a while, and I just love this song, and that's why I wanted to talk about it with you today because I'm still in love with it, and it's been out for so long. But this song was released on July 29th, 2014, and debuted at number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100 and has been on the charts ever since. So Bang Bang had 230,000 digital downloads sold in its first week out. And the first time I heard this song was actually on So You Think You Can Dance. And there was a group performance of the top 10, and it was choreographed by Jamal Sims. And I literally watched this dance about 10 times in probably 2 days because it was so, so good. I love So You Think You Can Dance. It's one of my all-time favorite shows, but I say that about everything. But it's a really good show. I love that show. I can't believe it's over because I just love watching it every week. But in this dance, all the dancers were wearing really bright colors, and it was kind of a Western theme. They were wearing, you know, cowboy and cowgirl outfits. There was cowboy hats on. There was lassos they were spinning and dancing with and stuff. But it kind of looked like they were in a saloon or something like that. And they're all just amazing dancers. If you literally tell them to do this, this, and that, they do it like 10 times better. But it just made me fall in love with the song. I knew the song was coming out because I follow Ariana Grande on Instagram, obviously, because I love her. And she was posting, you know, like the album, not the album, but the single picture, the pictures that they use to, you know, promote the single. And they had a little clip of it on Instagram. I think they each posted something about it. So I knew it was coming out, and then I heard it on So You Think You Can Dance, and I was like, oh my God, I love the song. But I wanted to talk about each individual girl because I feel like they're all so different, but they blend perfectly together for this song. So I'm going to start off with Jessie J. She is an English singer and songwriter who was born and raised in London, and in 2003, at age 15, she won Best Pop Singer in the TV show Britain's Brilliant Prodigies, and she opened for Cyndi Lauper in 2008 in her Bring a to the Brink tour on her UK shows, and even invited Jessie J to sing Girls Just Want to Have Fun on stage with her. And her music stylings are described as soulful vocals with a temporary R&B pop electronic feel with hip-hop beats. So she has written songs for artists including Miley Cyrus and Chris Brown. Miley Cyrus's Party in the USA. Love Miley Cyrus. I love Miley Cyrus. But Jessie J's third album is going to be released on October 13th, 2014. So that is coming up. So look out for that. So now I'm going to move on to Ariana Grande. And I think she's nothing but amazing. She is an American singer-songwriter who rose to fame being on Nickelodeon TV shows, including Victorious and Sam and Cat. But when she was in 2013, she released her debut studio album, Yours Truly, with the tracks The Way and Baby I. And so I first heard those two songs, obviously, The Way with Mac Miller was blasted all over the radio. I'm sure you've heard it before. And I heard that song and I heard Baby I and I really liked those songs. And last year I was like, I'm just gonna listen to the rest of the album. Why not? I literally listened to the album. Every song is good. And I was so surprised because I thought Ariana Grande was just really childish, young. She was on Nickelodeon. Why would I really want to listen to her music? But she's just so good. Her vocals are insane. She's compared to Mariah Carey. I don't really like Mariah Carey, but I love Ariana Grande. Like 2 weeks ago, I was waiting at my computer, ready to buy tickets for her upcoming tour, the Honeymoon Tour. So excited. I will be in San Jose April 12th, I think, 2015. I bought my tickets and I'm so excited. But anyways, she released her newest album, My Everything, on August 25th with singles including Problem and Break Free. And I'm sure you've heard those songs too. But I must tell you, this album is very good as well. I just love her so much, and I am really excited to go see her in concert and live because it's going to be amazing, and I can't wait. But lastly, Nicki Minaj is an American singer-songwriter and rapper who signed with Young Money Entertainment in 2009. Her debut album, Pink Friday, includes songs such as Starships and Super Bass. Her album, The Pink Print, is scheduled to release on November 24th, 2014, including her single, Anaconda. And I thought it was a fun fact, she actually has won a total of 64 awards, including 4 American Music Awards and 8 BET Awards. So she has her shelf filled, for sure. But, so I've talked about this performance on So You Think You Can Dance, and obviously, I mean, it's not obvious because if you haven't seen it, it's not that obvious, but they didn't perform the song. It was just the So You Think You Can Dance top 10 performing the song. They had a dance to it. So I went to go see the music video because the music video came out and I have to go see it, watch it. And I wasn't too thrilled for it, but I'll talk about it. In the beginning, we see aerial views of Los Angeles. I believe it's Los Angeles. Los Angeles. And while the beat of the music starts, it's just the beginning of it and repeats before the vocals come in. And we see Ariana Grande in her bedroom while she's doing her makeup. And then we see the streets of going outside and busy construction. The scenes change. And a lot of people are out doing their own thing. And then the scene changes again. And then we see Nicki Minaj on a rooftop at night. And she's walking towards a black helicopter. And the music goes between, the music video goes between these three scenes. And then Jessie J drives up in this pink car. And in the scene, she's on the street. And when she gets out of the car, everyone's staring at her like, who's that, blah, 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 blah. And then she starts singing and breaks out into this amazing vocal chords that she does. But anyways, the scene changes from where JCJ is to where Ariana Grande is, and they have dancers in the background, and then we see Nicki in her scene where she starts rapping. So whenever that girl starts singing, they go to their scene and they do their part. So it seems to me like Jessie J's scene, it was during the day on the street, and then at one point the camera scales up one of the buildings into a window, and then that's where Ariana Grande is in the bedroom. So I don't know if Nicki Minaj's scene was on top of that building. I wasn't really clear on that. But it was at night, so I don't know. But I guess that doesn't really matter. But I just noticed that, how they made the transition between Jessie J's and Ariana Grande's scene. But then when they went to Nicki Minaj's scene, it was just on the rooftop with a helicopter at night. It was kind of weird. But they all go on the top of the roof where Nicki's scene was and dance, and they sing and they finish the song together. And I think from start to finish, I'm a little biased because I love Ariana Grande. She looks flawless throughout the whole music video, but I'm obsessed with her. And I mean, her makeup alone just looked amazing, and her outfit just made her really good and showed off her body and her figure. And in the beginning, when Jessie J rolled up in that pink car, I didn't think she looked that great. Her hair was short. I mean, her hair is short, but it was kind of curly. But you know that curl that it's like more a frizz, not, you know, waves. It was kind of frizzy, and I wasn't really a fan of her outfit either. She had on these high-waisted black pants. They weren't like tight. They were kind of loose-fitting, and she was wearing a black bralette with white suspenders, but she had this hot pink lipstick that looked really good on her. But then she changed into another outfit where it was on the side of the building. She was on more of a balcony or a fire escape or something. But her outfit was, well, her hair was pinned straight, and there wasn't really a great view of her whole outfit, but she was wearing a black and red bralette with a red striped see-through skirt that really wouldn't be a great outfit to wear on a normal day. But she was wearing red lipstick that made her look really good. So the headshot looked really nice when it was zoomed in on her face. So that she looked good though. And then Nicki's outfit, I don't know. I'm just not a huge fan of leopard print, but she had on a leopard print skirt with a black leather top. And then they all changed when they were all sitting together, and their outfits were whatever. I wasn't too thrilled. There was nothing special, you know what I mean? So now I wanted to share with you an interview that Jessie J was talking about this single, and here it is.
Bang Bang, Max Martin, the genius behind the production, he sent it to me and was like, I think, you know, you could be one of the voices on this song, and I think it could be amazing for what the world wants from you. And I listened to it and was like, yes, this feels like a song that I want to prove myself on and vocally excite the world again. I felt like I wanted to really do something fun. And then there was Nicki and Ariana, and basically Max's idea was to kind of almost create like a girl band, as opposed to a feature, it being a moment of like empowering women and a real song that kind of gets you on your feet. And I recorded it first, and then Ariana jumped on, and then Nicki jumped on, and kind of just became what it is right now. Just a moment, a party. For me, it's about being confident. Like, there's that moment in the song where if you love a guy or vice versa or whatever, and you like someone and they're with someone that you feel like, I can be, you know, I can get it, I can be hot as them, you want to like portray that, and that's what the song's about. It's just about being confident, like really and truly. The video is going to be lots of dancers, lots of performance, lots of leg for Bang Bang. It's me, Nicki and Ariana are all going to be there. 2 days, yeah, sunshine, oil spray, looking hot and like actually hot, like just heat rash, probably my luck. You know when something's special, because most of the time it's when, like, if you're in the studio and you're writing a song, like when we did Price Tag and Domino, it was when like the engineers from other studios that don't ever speak to anyone come in and go, I like this song. That's when you know, like, people want you to know. So with this song, it's like the more it kind of got worked on and I put my vocal and then Ariana added and then Nicki, it was just like, it's no kind of no-brainer. We have to share it with the world. Well, hers is like butter. Like, her voice is just like melts. It's just so soft and pretty. And I'm not very good at soft singing. So I think that's why we kind of go with each other. It's the chili and the chocolate. It's that kind of like, it shouldn't work, but it does. And I just think she's amazing. I think she's incredible, yeah. I think that's the most important thing, is when you're recording a song, is just to put your signature on it. And the way Ariana sang her verse, I kind of wanted to make sure that mine was slightly different. I think it's important to show what makes us us. I didn't want her to sing it too hard and, or, you know, me to soften. I just wanted us to be us, you know, Nicki to be Nicki, which she 100% is.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting interview coming from one of the artists, and I wanted to share with that. With all of you. And there was also a performance, the only performance that they did live all together. This song was performed at the MTV Video Music Awards, and I thought that they all looked much better in the music or in this performance than they did in the music video. Except Nicki Minaj's wardrobe malfunction. I don't know if you heard about that, but she was doing a quick change and she didn't do it in time. And she basically was holding her whole dress together so she wasn't flashing the audience. But vocally, I thought this performance could have been better, but I still love the song nevertheless. I think Jessie J has an amazing voice that she totally gets. I feel like not a lot of people really know about Jessie J and just don't. I mean, Domino was a huge hit, but other than that, I feel like no one really listens to Jessie J. No one ever says, I mean, to me, I've never heard someone say Jessie J is my favorite artist. So, but I mean, I feel like she doesn't get enough credit. That's what I'm trying to say. Ariana Grande, I love her. Enough said. I feel like I've said that enough for you. Nicki Minaj, she's kind of up and down for me. I really loved Starships and Super Bass. I really liked those songs when they were out and playing on the radio all the time. But then I don't really like Anaconda that much. I mean, it's whatever to me. But in this song, Bang Bang, she kills it. She killed those rapping lyrics. She just let down those. I don't know how to describe it, but she nailed that. She did really well. I love the song, everything about it, and I feel like I had to talk about it with you because it's still very popular. Maybe you think it's overplayed, but this is one of those songs, one of those summer songs that I don't think is overplayed 1 second because it's so good. There's some songs that came out this summer that I just cannot stand. I can't listen to the radio anymore because they are played 24/7. But that's just me. I'm a weird human being. But that was my segment, Tunes Talk. And when we come back, I will go into my last segment, The Dirty Deets. But we will be back after this short message on radio.dominican.edu.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
Coming at you with another Bosco break. Christina Chesterman, 21, was studying to be a nurse when she was killed by a suspected drunk driver last year. But she managed to save lives anyway. A registered organ donor, Chesterman gave 5 people, including a baby, new life, and now the woman who received her heart wants to do something in return. Susanna Vieira, 64, has vowed to check off everything on Chesterman's bucket list, written down on a piece of paper her mom recently found. One of the items, save someone's life. Another, be in 4 places at once. Kinda trippy if you ask me. Vieira had completed several of the tasks already, including learning to fly a plane and riding a camel, ABC News reports. Vieira says, together we will finish her bucket list. I'd like to thank all things I continue to accomplish in my life. I'm taking Christina with me, Vieira continues. Chesterman's mom adds that she felt an instant connection to the woman she just met. Chesterman's friends are also helping to complete the bucket list, including one who took Chesterman's picture along for a first-class flight and another who went skydiving in her honor. You wonder why someone like that is taken so young, but I believe Christina was one of those very rare people who was so complete as a person already, says one friend. The rest of us are just a work in progress. As for another miracle, Jahia McMath, the 13-year-old girl declared brain dead not long after having her tonsils removed in December, has been kept on feeding and breathing support at St. Peter's University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Now, the Oakland, California girl's family says Jahi is once again showing brain activity, and they're asking a Bay Area court to walk back its declaration that she is dead. The newspaper notes that were this to happen, it would mark the first time an individual declared brain dead was found to regain brain activity. One prominent physician says such a reversal would be miraculous and would force us to re-examine the whole nature of death in America. Then he added, but I don't believe it. The family's attorney, meanwhile, says he has medical experts, including world-class experts on brain death, who will testify she is not brain dead. In court documents filed Tuesday, Christopher Dolan also said and claimed Jahi now responds to commands given by her mother. He says the determination of brain death occurred when there was swelling in her brain, and he says that swelling has subsided. While family members haven't disclosed who is privately paying for Jahia's care, they've acknowledged that by reversing her status as dead, she'd be eligible for state benefits just like others who are on ventilators and not brain dead. A hearing is set for Thursday. That's it for your Bosco Break. Get back to the show.
All right, you are still listening to Hollywood Soup on Penguin Radio. This is Dizzy D, and for my last segment for the day is The Dirty Deets. The Dirty Deets is your source of entertainment gossip from all over Hollywood. So let's get started. So some huge baby news came out today. Blake Lively is pregnant with her first child. Her husband, Ryan Reynolds, and her have talked about their desires to have kids and raise a huge family, and Blake announced her pregnancy on her website, www.preserve.us, with her family themes, and all of the buzz was taken away with a stunning picture she posted. It was her cradling her baby bump. So I am so excited about this baby, because last week, if you were listening, I talked about her and Ryan Reynolds, and I think they are such a cute couple. I love them together, and I am so excited that she is having her first child. So we'll see what happens. I'm really excited because I just love her so much. But moving on, Adam Sandler will be starring in 4 movies exclusively on Netflix. All of Adam Sandler's films that are on Netflix are the highest ranking films with the most views. No dates have been set with when these movies will be released, but the 50 million Netflix members are going to have a sneak peek. So Ted Sarandos, Netflix chief content officer, stated that his appeal spans across viewers of all ages. Everybody has a favorite movie. Everyone has a favorite line, just not in the U.S., not just in the U.S., but all over the world. So Adam Sandler could be a very good match with Netflix, since the original shows Orange and the New Black and House of Cards are very popular shows that can only be viewed on Netflix. So we'll see what happens. I'm a huge Adam Sandler fan. He gets a lot of crud for just being not funny, but I think he's so funny. He's one of my favorite actors, and I'm very excited because Netflix is my entire life. I always watch Netflix. It's probably not a TV. Actually, there's a lot of TV shows that I haven't watched, but I watch a ton of TV shows on Netflix. So I am very excited to see those movies. So next we have, I talked about this last week, but something happened this week that could be very, well, it is very good for these celebrities. But after the fear of a $100 million lawsuit on Thursday, Google removed tens and thousands of photos and closed numerous accounts due to the photo hacking incident that leaked celebrities' nude photos onto the internet. The Los Angeles law firm Lively and Singer represented over a dozen celebrities whose photos and videos were hacked onto the internet. Allegedly, these women that they are representing include, these are not for sure, but these are some of the names that I've researched and found: Kim Kardashian, Hayden Panettiere, Vanessa Hudgens, Avril Lavigne, U.S. soccer goalie Hope Solo, and U.S. gymnast Michaela Maroney. So, I'm glad that that is taken care of because I could not imagine how these girls are feeling, and hopefully this is the end to all of it, but we'll see. So next, I'm sure you heard of this, but USA Olympian Michael Phelps was arrested for driving under the influence, excessive speeding, and crossing double lane lines inside the Baltimore tunnel on September 30th in Maryland. Michael takes full responsibilities for his actions and is entering himself in a six-week inpatient program. He is going to be working on long-term personal growth and development, and he is taking this matter very seriously because this is his second DUI in nearly 10 years. So I'm glad that he's acting that way and saying that it's not his fault and everything like that, and he's actually taking responsibility and realizing that what he did was wrong. So good for him. But moving on. Last week, Sophia Bush confronted her online stalker by posting his comments on Instagram. She has been dealing with this stalker for over 3 months, and some of her followers have also been harassed and bullied as well by him. With the long caption she posted, she stated, "The photograph is a tiny sampling of over 500 screenshots I've taken in the past 3 months. And I'm sharing it here to make something very clear. This kind of behavior does not fly. You do not have permission to hide, not anymore. This has gotten beyond out of hand, obsessive, violent, and legally punishable." She also apologized to her fans who have received cruel comments on Twitter. And I don't know if you've heard of Sophia Bush, but she is one of my favorite actresses because she was on One Tree Hill, which is I think it's one of my all-time favorite shows, but I say that about everything. But honestly, this show is on Netflix, and I literally I will watch something on Netflix and stop watching it because I want to watch One Tree Hill. And that show never gets old to me because I love it so much. It's so heartwarming. It makes me smile and believe in love. Because this show, if you haven't seen it, girls or guys, my cousin watches the show, you need to watch it because it's so, so good. But this just makes me sad because, oh, and she was also in John Tucker Must Die. She was one of the girls that was trying to get back up John Tucker. But anyways, I just love Sophia Bush. So the fact that she was dealing with this, I had no idea. And I just hope that she's okay because, like I said last week, I was talking about it last week about stalkers and all of that stuff. So I just hope that she is okay. But anyways, next story I have for you today is about Raven Simone. She sat down with an interview with Oprah Winfrey for her show, Where Are They Now? And Raven Simone answered some questions regarding her identity. And first off, Oprah asked her about a tweet that Raven posted last year saying, "I can finally get married. Yay, government. So proud of you." And so when she was asked about this tweet and if this was actually her coming out, Raven said, "That was my way of saying I'm proud of the country. But I will say that I'm in an amazing, happy relationship with my partner, a woman." Then she goes on to say how she doesn't want to be labeled as gay or even labeled as an African American, just American. She stated, "I don't want to be labeled as gay. I want to be labeled as a human who loves humans. I'm tired of being labeled. I am an American. I'm not an African American. I am an American." So I thought that was kind of interesting. Oprah kind of, not lashed out, but kind of confronted her and said, you know, you're going to get a lot of people saying that's wrong and stuff. But I don't know. I feel like she looked great in the interview. I really liked her hair. It's like purple and blue. I think it looks really good on her, though. But I mean, it's her life. She could say whatever she wants and she can feel however she wants to. If she doesn't want to be labeled as those things, then she should, I mean, she has full right to say what she wants, you know, what she, how she feels and what she wants to do. So, I mean, she could do whatever she wants. That's all I have to say. Anyways, going on to another story. The former co-stars of That 70s Show, Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher, had a baby girl on September 30th at the Los Angeles Cedars Sinai Medical Center. They named their baby girl Wyatt Isabel Kutcher. So I am so excited for them. I actually am probably the few people in the world that have never seen That 70s Show, but I just love these two together. I love Mila Kunis. I think she's just such a cool, chill girl, and Ashton Kutcher is just super funny. So I'm excited that they had this and they're still engaged, and I can't wait for their wedding. But next up, Charlie Sheen is being sued by a dental technician after his recent visit. The dental technician filed a lawsuit alleging assault, battery, sexual battery, and intentional affliction of emotional distress. Charlie Sheen's lawyer, Martin Singer, stated these claims were filed in retaliation of her losing her job for violating HIPAA laws protecting patients. We are confident that we will prevail on these absurd claims. According to the lawsuit, when the dental technician was asked by the dentist and proceeded to put the nitrous oxide mask on his face, Charlie Sheen jumped out of his chair and proclaimed, "I am going to effing kill you." When she continued, Charlie Sheen grabbed her left breast and then started tugging at her scrubs and bra strap. After that, she tried to apply a topical anesthetic to Sheen's mouth instead of the gas, and then Charlie Sheen said to his security guard, "Gary, tell them what you do for a effing living. Gary, tell them how many guys you have effing killed. About 1,000, right, Gary?" It is rumored that Charlie Sheen had been high on a combination of crack cocaine, Theradol, and alcohol. So that's pretty interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if it's true, but that's just what's being said. And I thought I would share that with you all because that is what's being talked about. So, and lastly, the last story I have for you all today is about my boys. The longest and most torturous baseball game in postseason history was played on Saturday night, a long night for the Giants and the Nationals. After 18 innings, the Giants beat the Nationals on Saturday in a 2-1 ball game in the second game of the National League Division Series. The third ball game started today at 2:07 p.m. and the score is currently 0-0, top of the seventh. So Madison Bumgarner is still pitching and there's currently no balls, one strike, and no outs. So I hope they win and they sweep the Nationals. That would be great. So we will be going to, hopefully, we would be going to the National League Championship Series. So whatever team wins the best out of 5 games will be heading to that series. But anyways, that is the end of the Dirty Deets. And I hope you all enjoyed this week's show. Tune in next Monday at 3 to hear who will be going down in the deep boiling water on Hollywood Soup with Dizzy D on Penguin Radio. And also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at DizzyD_DU for updates throughout the week. And I hope you have a good rest of your week. And thanks for listening.